This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. I have the lady that runs the whole operation of the Patriotic Millionaires. Her name is Erica Payne. She is a political strategist, messaging expert, and has run some of the most powerful issue campaigns you may not actually remember, but we're going to talk maybe about a couple of them. I certainly remember one of the famous ones, Granny Off the Cliff. We'll get to all of it and more on today's episode. Welcome back, Erica. Let's just dig right in. Big election today.
What? There's an election
there
today?
Is a thing happening. Big election. It's going to be a big one, not just because of what the candidates represent, but for some very particular policies. We know that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which really I'll just call the Trump tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations, some of those things expire next year, so there's going to be a big tax fight. But today I wanted to ask you about the minimum wage, because Donald Trump has refused to say on the campaign trail whether he supports raising the minimum wage. Kamala Harris has said that she would. What is the state of the minimum wage today, Erica, in your opinion? And do we have a problem?
Well, Maggie, we have such a problem. And I think the great thing is that we are waking up to that problem and we can fix this problem. This is one of the easiest things in the country to fix. And listen, our theory of this case, Maggie, is that Americans would like to get along better. We are, you know, everybody's kind of mad at being sick of being mad at their relatives. Mm. You know, I mean, that's part of what this is about. We have always had healthy political debates. We have to have a healthy two-party system. No one party is ever right, but we are actually facing a situation where we know exactly what kind of economy the other side wants to create. And there are two main elements of an economy: the wage floor and the tax system. In 2017, on a party line vote, Republicans in Congress passed a brand new tax code. They basically rewrote the entire federal tax code. Donald Trump signed that new tax code into law. And in 2018, for the first time in American history, billionaires paid a lower effective tax rate than every single other group in America.
Wait. Did you just tell me that Donald Trump lowered the tax rate for billionaires to the lowest it's ever been in U.S. history? Donald Trump did that?
Well, number one, he lowered it, and he also structured the tax code is a labyrinth of different policies, right? And it's all basically figuring out how you value different kinds of money. Now, the Republican tax code, the Trump tax code that passed in 2018, it does a few of the things. Number one, it taxes people into poverty. Mm. All right. So the median cost of living for a single adult with no children in the United States of America is $40,000 a year. If you make $20 an hour, that's $40,000 a year. You can support yourself. Okay. This taxes people into poverty. So if you make $30,000 a year, $35,000 a year, the federal government is going to tax you into poverty. That's one of the elements of this. He also took a bunch of the tax revenues that billionaires were bringing in and they got rid of them. And so now we have this situation where people who are literally figuratively drowning in money, money they will never spend, that they're clearly bored with it. Now they're trying to manipulate our political system. Okay, where they're paying lower taxes and a lower tax rate than working folks. So all of this stuff will expire, and next year we can put in place a new tax code. And that's what we need to do. But we need to make sure that the people leading the discussions about what the new tax code are going to look like recognize that working people are the backbone of this nation. They are sick of being taken advantage of, and they need a tax code that works for them. So that's the tax code. The second half of this equation is the wage floor. You know, I always tell people, stand up, jump up and down, stomp your foot. If you fell through your floor, you know you need a better floor.
Yes.
Our wage floor is $7.25 an hour, Maggie. That's the federal wage floor. So you could work full time every single day, 52 weeks a year, you will come home with $15,000. There is nowhere in the country you can support yourself on $15,000. And so we've set up a system where we're not pre-distributing money to anybody through their jobs, and we're refusing to redistribute it through the tax code. So we're ending up in what we are on the verge of an oligarchy, Maggie. And if Donald Trump gets elected, he will advance that oligarchy. And we don't want that. We want to have a good, strong, powerful capitalist democracy.
Well, and that as we've pointed out, as you and I have discussed, as I've discussed with some of the patriotic millionaires themselves, a capitalist democracy requires a growing, vibrant middle class with buying power. In other words, a middle class that is paid enough to consume all kinds of goods, not just the essential bundle of goods, your housing, your healthcare, your education, those sorts of things, your automobile, but consume the products that all of these businesses are making. Businesses do better when the middle class does better. This is that. It's one of the ironies, Erica, when I zoom out and I think about the even the MAGA slogan. I'm like, well, do you know when it was great? Okay, let's talk about that period of time, because the tax code looked nothing like this. We actually had a more meaningful minimum wage. So what's at stake when we think about wage policy? You've explained what's at stake when we're talking about tax policy. What's at stake when it comes to wage policy?
Well, so right now, Maggie, 40% of people in this country cannot meet their basic cost of living. So again, 40% of people in the country work and make less than $40,000 a year. 70% of the people work and make less than the cost of living for a single adult with one child. And so what this means is, number one, we've got a consumer demand driven economy. 70% of our economy is people buying stuff. So we need that 70% to be as flush with cash as possible. And you have to remember that when someone clocks out of their job and stops being an employee, they become a consumer. Now, what should a bar owner care more about? Should they care more about how much beer money every single person in a bar on a Friday night has in their pocket that they got from their paycheck? Or should they care about how much they're paying one bartender? That's basically how to think about the economy. When the bartender leaves, he becomes a customer. So we need people walking out of their jobs with money to spend. That's number one. So that's how we fuel our economy. But the second piece of this is time, Maggie. A democracy requires the investment in the civic life of the nation. If somebody is working 80 hours a week, can't make ends meet, has two kids, and is drowning, they can't participate in the PTA meetings. They can't go to the soccer game. They're off to their $7.50 an hour job, their $8 an hour job. And then at the end of it, they're exhausted. They can't participate fully. So we can't have the kind of vibrant democracy that we want, because a vibrant democracy requires people who have enough time left in their day after meeting their needs to raise their children and engage in civic life. So we're really trying to free people's time, get more money into their pockets from the work that they do. So instead of it all going to the CEOs, so FYI, you know, McDonald's paying $8, $9, $10 an hour, their CEO made 3,100 times their lowest paid worker last year. Give me a break.
Folks, that is Erica Payne. She is the executive director of and the founder of the Patriotic Millionaires. You've answered both of these questions, but I want to ask them again in a different way, Erica, because this is what I always hear from my conservative friends when we start talking about the minimum wage. The first is, you're going to kill small businesses if you raise the minimum wage. The second one is, well, minimum wage jobs at 7.25 are for teenagers and people with hobby jobs and a lot of free time. These aren't meant to be family supporting jobs. If you could address both of those issues.
Well, so number one, you're not talking about what kind of job it is. You're basically saying, what is an hour of a person's time worth? And you have to look at it from how are you pulling back the lens and not looking at it through the lens of one individual running a business who has a set of costs. You're looking at how that one business in combination with thousands and thousands of other businesses runs an economy. So that's a different set of circumstances. So one way to look at this is to recognize that the decisions that people make in the law determine these kinds of things. So if you increase the minimum wage, everybody has to do it all at one time.
It's a fair competitive playing field for the small businesses, right? You're saying once you raise the minimum wage, it can be detrimental to an individual small business if that wage floor isn't raised for all. But if it's raised for all, then all those small businesses are competing on that level playing field. Okay, sorry, Erica,
that's
go ahead.
Right now. So like if I went into your individual small business and said every other bakery in town can pay their people $8, $9 an hour, but you individually as a business have to pay your person $15, $16, $17. You're going to be at a competitive disadvantage. Now, if I tell all the businesses in a town over the next 5 years, we're going to slowly increase wages about $1 a year so we get to a place where a full-time job can support a single person with no children, that's a different exercise. The other thing is these are laws that can be structured however you want. So if you're worried about small businesses, structure the law so larger businesses go first. I mean, it won't hurt small business, so we don't really feed into the argument. But if it makes small business owners feel more comfortable, sure, you can tell your lawmakers in your state, structure the law so that people who have, you know, X amount of millions of dollars of revenue, they have to raise wages first. Then other people can follow. You can structure this thing however you want. The fact is, though, it is not $7.25 an hour.
Yeah, anyway, you do the math. As an economist, I've always been utterly baffled by this. We can actually calculate how much it costs to live in various areas, given the differences in both healthcare and housing costs, which are the primary drivers of these differences. But as you've pointed out, Erica, as the Patriotic Millionaires have pointed out, really, we're talking about $20 an hour to get to $40,000 a year, which is what we know, give or take some small variation. It's what it costs a single person with no kids to meet just your basic needs. If we,
and Maggie, let's talk about the fact that 40% of people, it's not 10%, it's not 15%, 40% of people don't make enough to meet their needs. No wonder everybody's upset. They should be upset.
People that are ticked off, you're ticked off for a gosh darn good reason. We're going to talk about that more with our special guest, Erica Payne, on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. I've got the founder of the Patriotic Millionaires, Erica Payne, joining me this afternoon. We're talking about tax and wage policy. What's at stake in today's election? Basically everything. If you are in the middle class, or frankly, you know, the 95% of us that didn't make out like bandits from Trump's last tax cut. Welcome back, Erica. Thank you so very much. I wanted to ask you to help us sort of work through this. Let's say whether it's tomorrow or in 2 or 3 days, we wake up and Donald Trump has been declared the winner of this presidential election. What do the prospects for a fairer tax code, one that actually works for the middle class, and a fairer minimum wage look like with a second Trump presidency?
It kind of depends on what the division is on the other two houses. Mm. So, I mean, the Democrats if they choose to use it, if they control at least one house of government, they have a very simple job in front of them if they want to fix this tax code. And that job is to do nothing. Here is the great thing about the Trump tax code.
There was a great thing.
Billionaires. No, there is a great thing. There is a great thing about the Trump tax code, and that is that it expires. And that in order to extend these tax cuts for billionaires, people are going to have to vote on that. And so next year, if Democrats control at least one branch of government, all they have to do is say, we're not playing, we're not negotiating, we're going to go back to the tax code before your tax code. And that'll happen. And that tax code is not great. It's definitely, you know, not all that we want it to be. It is infinitely better than the tax code we are currently living under. And so that's a really wonderful, wonderful sign. I also think, you know, everybody says a nation's budget is a moral document. Our tax code is a moral document. You know, we will have an opportunity to have this fight next year, regardless of who's in the White House, the Senate, and the House. It's time for America to talk about its money problem. And the money problem is that the billionaires are taking all of it out of the pockets of working people. And the tax code can fix that.
It is the only redeeming element of the Trump Tax Cuts for Billionaires Act of 2017 is that those tax cuts expire and we'll go back to a less stinky tax code. Not a good one, but a less stinky one if those tax cuts roll off. Erica, is this really the root of the reason why it is so important, not just for people to vote, but for folks to be looking at those down ballot congressional and Senate races in their states and congressional districts?
Oh, 100%. And let me say, you all have a tax champion in Senator Tammy Baldwin. So there is a loophole in the tax code that is extraordinarily popular with a bunch of rich billionaires who come in, raid companies, sell off the assets, and put a bunch of people out of work. It's called the carried interest loophole. And that gives the preferential capital gains treatment to the people who just manage other people's money. It is the biggest scam in the tax code. And Tammy Baldwin is the lead sponsor on the bill that would get rid of that tax code. If you're looking for a clue about how somebody lives and breathes in this world, look at their views on the tax code. She recognizes how unfair this tax code is. She recognizes some of the specific people who are getting the most benefit out of how grotesquely unfair it is. And she has looked at those specific people and written a bill to withdraw from them that privilege they have that they never should have had.
Yeah, the carried interest loophole. She's looked at
it's stock. Actually, it's also called the billionaire's loophole.
Because it is how they hide huge swaths of their billions, as well as, of course, stock buybacks. I mean, Tammy Baldwin, when it comes to tax policy, you know, having followed her since her days in the Madison Common Council in there as an alder person in the city of Madison to today, she has always had this particular issue front and center for working people. It's one of those things, if I may, Erica, and I'd love to get your impressions about this. It seems to me that increasingly, especially from one party, we tend to see now that their candidates are all extraordinarily wealthy people. You rarely get actual Republican candidates that are from and of the middle class. We've had Ron Johnson. We've got Eric Hovde. We've got Tony Weed. We had Tim Michaels. It's an indication to regular people. If the only folks that are running from that party are these extremely privileged, ultra wealthy, meaning net worths of over $50 million. Gee, is this the best we can do? I'm not sure these people are really in tune with what families, working families in Wisconsin need and want.
Well, they're not in tune with it, and they also don't care. I mean, to be perfectly honest, these folks are not looking at a working person going to work, standing on their feet all day long, then taking their kids to school. I mean, we are asking people in this country to do more than we should be asking them to do. People work hard. They want to just lead decent, honest lives. And we need an economy that is structured in such a way that we can support American families. And a minimum wage at $7.25. Look, Donald Trump controlled three branches of government. Okay, that's how he got his tax code, which gave tax cuts to billionaires, passed. You know what he could have done? He could have passed a minimum wage bill. Because let me tell you, Democrats would have voted for basically anything he put on the table. He could have put $10 on the table. He could have put $11 on the table. He could have put something lower than what we needed. But he didn't put anything. He controlled everything. And he decided not to give working people in America a raise. That was his choice.
This is an absolutely essential point, Erica. Donald Trump could have claimed an additional victory and painted himself yet again in some populist garb by saying, I raise the minimum wage. They didn't bother to do that because Donald Trump doesn't want to do that. His billionaire donors and his billionaire buddies, including himself, don't want an increased minimum wage, even though it'd be better for the economy overall, especially in the medium and longer run. It's shocking to me that he doesn't bear a greater amount of accountability for that. People have seemed to forgotten. Just to be very clear, Eric Hovde has supported extending the Donald Trump tax cuts for billionaires and 100 millionaires like Hovde himself. Erica, last thoughts. We have just a little bit under 20 seconds left.
Whoever wins, we're going to get right back at it. Let's build an economy that works for working people.
That starts tomorrow, and that work will not be done anytime soon. Folks, that's Erica Payne, the founder of the Patriotic Millionaires. Keep it locked. More with the Maggie Dawn Show when we come back after these brief messages.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Don't worry, y'all. We got this. And we got it because of incredible people like my very next guests. Really excited to be joined on Election Day by Dr. Kristen Lierley and former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh. Dr. Kristen Lierley, running in the 8th Congressional District. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Lierley, great to have you. How you feeling? Where are you at? Last push? Are you feeling good about this one?
Maggie, I couldn't be feeling better. We started the day in Green Bay. We ended up down in Appleton with Secretary of State Godlewski talking about how great things are going, how secure and safe our elections are. The conversations we've been having, we were having lunch and our server came up to us, gave us free dessert and said, thank you for doing what you're doing. I wanted to get my tubes tied and I couldn't get the services that I needed. And I know you'll stand up for women. So I couldn't be more appreciative. I voted for you. People are coming out of the woodwork to tell us how important this election is to them.
What a great story to hear. I know you've heard hundreds of them during the course of your campaigning. Former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. How are you feeling today? Do you think there is this movement, especially from conservative women, voting perhaps quietly for Vice President Harris that might make the difference today and in the coming days as we count all the votes?
Well, Maggie, great to be with you. First, I want to find out what she had for that free dessert. What was dessert?
Oh, they were beignets and they were so good, but it was nothing compared to the conversation.
I love a good beignet. I feel really, really good. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, every battleground state I've been in these last few months, I just think there's been a movement of independents and Republicans who are going to pull the trigger against MAGA candidates, against Trump, and for Kamala Harris and Democrats up and down the ballot to send a message to MAGA. And I think and hope that that's going to play out today. I really do.
As do I. Kristen, I know you've got a ton of places to be this afternoon, super busy. If you want to take a moment and please address those voters in the 8th CD that may not have voted yet or are still on the fence. Take it away, Dr. Lyerly.
Oh, friends, it is time. Here I am in my raincoat. We were out knocking doors in Green Bay, knocking doors in Kakana and Little Chute, all over the district. And there are still folks out there who haven't voted. It's raining here. Do not let the rain deter you. This is the most consequential election of our lifetime. We say it all the time, but I think people truly do understand that, especially for women. And I'm not just talking about young women, women across the board, young families, old people. People know that this is about so many of the decisions that we have to be able to make ourselves, decisions about our reproductive health care, our own health care, the economy, things that we haven't been able to do under the current difficult political environment with all of the fear and the divisiveness. We're pulling it back together. We're having the conversations we need to have, and we are on the cusp of changing our democracy.
Folks, that's Dr. Kristen Lyerly, candidate for the 8th Congressional District. Thank you so much for making time today, Dr. Lyerly. I know you got to get back out there and knock some more doors in the rain. I appreciate you. Good luck. I will be watching very carefully. I think your congressional district is one of those bellwether districts. As goes the 8th, I think goes Wisconsin. So I'm pulling for you, my friend. Good luck this afternoon.
Thank you, my friend. Looking forward to your coverage tonight.
Wonderful, folks. Again, that's Dr. Kristen Lyerly, candidate in the 8th Congressional District. Joe, it has been just an absolute study in contrast over this past week and a half. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this. When Donald Trump loses, this will be cited by political strategists as one of the weakest closing arguments in modern American history ever put forth to the American public by a presidential candidate. I don't know a way that he has succeeded in these last 10 to 14 days. Every time he's opened his mouth, he seems more extreme, more offensive. There's yet another group of people that's being alienated. Joe, what's your take on this study and contrast between the closing arguments among these two candidates for president?
Well, Mag, you're right, but let's just back up a moment. He's an idiot. I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but we can't normalize him. He's not a normal human being. If you 6 months ago talked to his inside campaign circle, they would have told him to say A, B, C, D, E. These are the four things you should say every time you speak. He's incapable of doing that because he's a bad guy. He's a stupid guy. He's a dishonest guy. He's a cruel guy. I don't feel sorry for his campaign staff because when you sign on to work for him, screw you. You get everything you deserve. But Maggie, they gave him a game plan. Just talk about immigration, the economy, and look at Kamala Harris and say, you've been there for 4 years. You've been there for 4 years. You've been there for 4 years. That's all he had to say. That's all he had to say in that debate with her a couple months ago. But he's incapable of that. So he brought up they're eating cats and dogs, and forget about the rest. He's a horrible human being, and it's a good thing he is, because a normal Republican would have a much easier time of winning this election.
That gets me to a question here, Joe, and I've been wondering about this, because it seems to me that Donald Trump, in his own mind, went, and I'm going to say it is very intentional. It's both his sort of id and from a Freudian place and his messed up psychology. But it seems that he was very calculated in a very transactional way that cruelty would be the brand. Cruelty and isms of every stripe would be the selling point, that he was going to double down on that. That's what the pick of a guy, a shapeshifter, a chameleon, a con artist like J.D. Vance means, is I'm going to double down on the cruelty. That, again, the cruelty being the point, that is the selling point that he thinks is going to win this election. You get a quote-unquote normal Republican Republican up there, how far are they ever going to be able to move off the cruelty? I mean, they'll sound better. J.D. Vance doesn't say things that are quite as bad as Donald Trump. But does cruelty sort of remain the brand even beyond this election?
Cruelty, yes. Hate and fear, Maggie. I call it hate and fear. Hate and fear. It is now, it's what the right is all about. And I have a unique perspective, as
yeah, you
know, because I come from the right, and I come from right-wing talk radio. And I'm here to tell you, hate and fear sold for me. I didn't dabble in it as much as these folks do, but I dabbled in it at time, more than I'm proud of. Hate and fear still sells. Trump believes he can scare people into voting for him. Maggie, fear is a really powerful motivator, and it's not just his base. You and I have talked about this before.
Yes.
He's trying to scare people beyond his base.
Yes.
And she's appealing to our better angels. It's a contest.
Indeed it is. Here's my question for you, Joe. Is the Republican Party, as people who may find themselves call themselves conservatives or have voted Republican for much of their lives, is that still the party that they're voting for? In my mind, you know, my few years on the planet, or many years, depending on what, 47 of them, this isn't Republicanism. It bears absolutely no resemblance to what the messaging, the themes of Ronald Reagan, HW, GW, it's unrecognizable. So for folks out there that are Republicans or conservatives, is this the party that they have been a part of, or has this morphed into something utterly unrecognizable?
Maggie, the only thing Donald Trump was ever correct about, and I say this as a former Republican, Donald Trump knew how weak the Republican Party was. Trump knew 9 years ago how easy it would be to take over the Republican Party. This is the Republican Party. Ronald Reagan, HW, forget about it. That party's long gone and dead. The Republican Party now is the MAGA Party. It's going to remain the MAGA Party even if and when Trump loses. This is the party from now on. It is a party. It's a nationalist party. It's an authoritarian party. It's a build a wall around America party. This is the party now. And the country needs to come to grips with that.
And come together to say this isn't what we want, be us conservatives or more progressives or independents or swing voters. What we don't want is a country where our politics is divided by hate, racism, misogyny, homophobia. I don't want it. It's exhausting. And it's frankly pretty disgusting. And for, you know, if you care about foreign policy at all, and the idea of us as a shining city on a hill, as Ronald Reagan said, it's an embarrassment. The entire world laughs at Donald Trump, the authoritarians included, because they know that all they need to do is flatter the man and maybe offer him a little shekel on the side, and he'll be theirs for the taking. I wanted to just play this sound for you. This is going to be cut 18, Cardi, because I thought, boy, J.D., Trump makes unforced errors, so does he, but this has to be the cherry on top of the JD foot and mouth sundae. Let's take a listen.
And the trash's name is Kamala Harris.
Can you play it for us again, Cardi, and turn it way up if you don't
one
mind?
One more time.
Cardi, we can't hear the cut. If you can hit that one more
time. And the trash's name is Kamala Harris.
So, Joe, obviously you've heard this before. Obviously, this is J.D. Vance calling Kamala Harris trash. Does this work? Does this get them a single additional vote that they wouldn't have gotten before he said it? Does it lose them votes?
No, it doesn't lose them votes. It energizes the base. I don't think that gets... Look, Maggie, like nobody knows anything, but just as I watch what's happening around the country today, I feel like women... here's what I think. I think women are going to save our democracy. I think Republicans voting for Harris are going to really help get her elected. I think young people are coming out. But at the end of the day, women are going to say, I'm done with this BS. I'm done with this cruelty. I think women are going to vote against the Vances and the Trumps of the world. And I think that's going to be the story tomorrow.
I couldn't agree with you more, Joe. And I had some very deep intuitive sense about this as Donald Trump doubled down on what I'm just going to call the bro strategy, right? It, like, okay, let's make fear of empowered women the point. Let's make hating immigrants the point. Let's make, again, hating homosexuals or the LGBTQIA community the point and the brand. The knuckle-dragger bro strategy doubled down. Well, that always leaves the door open for the pendulum to swing the other way and for women to say, we don't want a government or leaders that are defined by that. Joe, do you think that backlash is, I mean, you just said it, you do think it's going to be enough to take Kamala Harris over the top? Where does this leave those bros? Like, are we going to see violence? Are they going to be that mad? Are they going to feel that betrayed by Donald Trump and J.D. Vance that they act out in some way?
Yes, but understand, Maggie, let me back up a moment.
Sure.
The reason this election is so close is because Democrats, and you and I can fight about this after the election, Democrats have been utterly, they have lost touch with working class America. And that created an opening for Trump 9 years ago to come along and demagogue and feed bull crap to working class America. There are real problems with immigration and the economy, real, real problems that working class America is concerned about. Democrats haven't been in touch with these issues, and they've been more into like woke stuff. And again, I fully acknowledge that Trump has come along and he's fed them, like immigration's an issue. What has Trump done? He's tried to scare the hell out of them. Mm-hmm. These people are committing crimes everywhere. They're eating your cats and your dogs. All bull crap, all lies. But then you've got these working class voters who hear the lies that Trump feeds them, and they say, well, at least Trump's listening to me. And I look over here at the Democrats. The Democrats don't seem to give a damn about what I'm concerned about. Democrats have an issue. They got to find a way to talk to working class America again.
And that's where I want to pick up with you, Joe, is figuring out how to talk to working class America, because I do think Democrats have been trying to get some policies for working class America done. They haven't messaged it well. Folks, more with former Congressman from Illinois, former Republican Joe Walsh, when we come back on this special Election Day coverage here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My special guest closing out my show today on Election Day, former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh, former Tea Partier, former Righty Talk radio host, and now a friend of mine and a friend of yours. Joe, always a pleasure.
How funny is that, Maggie? How funny is that, that you and me are friends now? How wild.
I just like to think this is because, one, strange times sometimes bring people with differing views of the world together. But I also think that it is emblematic of the fact that both conservatives and folks who are more progressive, and I actually consider myself a centrist and a pragmatist above all else, that there actually is much to be discussed and learned from one another. And I think so much of politics have been about the politics of distraction, right? Like, look over here, not at what's actually happening. Because as you put it before we went to break, Joe, people legitimately feel like they're getting screwed. If you're a working person in this country, especially if you work for an hourly wage, you have felt unfairly treated. And the reality is, when we look at our labor policies, we look at our tax policies, I think the middle class has been unfairly treated. And the improvements or the work that has been done often is on a macro level, it's difficult to brand and explain. But when we come right down to brass tacks, you know, we look at how wealth and income inequality has grown over the last 60 years in this country, people are absolutely right to feel ticked off. They have been getting screwed. We don't have an economy that works as it should for the middle class. And I, by middle class, folks, I mean basically anybody that's got a net worth of south of maybe 20 million bucks, which might shock some people, but that's what I think we're at. We got a tax code that works for people with tens of millions of bucks, not for folks that are trying to leave a little to their kids or make it a little bit easier for their kids in the next go round. Joe, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, you and I'll pick up where we're leaving off today after the election to have some more of these debates. But your thoughts on that, because I do think Democrats have tried to get things done for the middle class. I think overall the economy right now is the envy of the world, but we need to translate that into better real wage growth and better tax policy that's fairer to middle class Americans.
And that's the debate we all need to have after the election. Mm. I guess the discussion for right now, though, is working class America has felt like the Democratic Party has grown arrogant and elitist. And when you, by the way, Maggie, when you look at the data, Democrats now have become the party of the college educated, the wealthy suburbanites. And you see working class Americans who have concerns about immigration, right, and the economy, and Trump scares them on these issues, but they haven't felt like, you know, the Democratic Party has been listening to them for a long, long time. I want Kamala Harris to win, but after she wins, Democrats need to do some real soul searching about how they can roll up their sleeves and listen to working class America again. They really need to do that.
I think not just listen to, but talk to, listen first and talk to and engage these kinds of discussions. I've been hearkening back, you know, when John McCain was doing that town hall and a woman called Barack Obama like a terrorist and he said, "No, ma'am. No, we disagree about a bunch of stuff, but that's a good person." Like, that's the place I want to be able to get back to have these kinds of meaningful debates about the things that actually show up in people's pocketbooks and at their kitchen tables.
And we will not get back to that if he wins.
Correct.
We can get back to that if she wins.
Yes. That, to me, when I talk to conservative friends of mine, I say, great, let's have those debates. And yes, we have had an immigration problem. Our system is broken. We need to do better on all these things. Wouldn't it be nice to have that discussion? And just as you said, Joe, I think the closing argument is, if you want to have those discussions, if you feel like your issues haven't been heard, vote for Kamala Harris. We can have those discussions again.
And that's the perfect closing argument, Maggie. And if you want 4 years of utter chaos with Trump's mug in front of you every single day, then go ahead and vote for Trump. But if you want to kind of have serious conversations about getting stuff done, vote for Kamala Harris.
Folks, that's Joe Walsh, former Illinois congressman, former Tea Partier, former right-wing radio host, friend of mine, and a friend of each and every one of you, because having the tough conversations about the issues that actually matter is the job of people that do what Joe and I do. Joe, if you're talking to, let's say, a man that lives in the state of Wisconsin, maybe in the North Woods, maybe in the western part of the state, hasn't voted yet, thinks Kamala Harris is up to no good, but also thinks Trump is a bad dude, and he hasn't voted yet, what's your argument to him, Joe?
If you give a damn about our democracy, vote for her. I would say to him, hey, one of these two candidates is going to lose. Your vote means something. Trump will never accept your vote, because if Trump loses, he'll never concede. So if you care about that, vote for her. And I would, the other thing I'd say, Maggie, is, look, again, if you want the Trump crap show, I'm watching my language, in front of your TV set for 4 years, right? It's just stupid, stupid bull crap every day for 4 years and nothing gets done, then have at it. Vote for Trump. But if you want to try to begin to get stuff done, I mean, she's going to put a Republican in her cabinet. She's going to pull all kinds of people together. If you want to try to get stuff done, vote for her.
Thanks so much, Joe. It's been a real pleasure. I can't wait to continue more of these policy debates with you, my friend. Folks, I hope you join me in a big heartfelt thanks to former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh, our special guest today.
You rock, Maggie!
Love you, Joe! Take care, everybody. Get out there and vote. Civic Media's special election coverage continues with the Dom Salvia Show up next. I might be there for a little overtime, a little chit-chat with my good friend Dom, but we'll be here all night helping you get through today's big election. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for democracy.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.